today I'm with Ben Mizzen in Park Gate near Southampton, and it's a very hot afternoon. I'm very disappointed, Ben, that there's not more Lego for me to play with during the interview.
I could go and get some if you wanted it.
It's okay, if we've got time, maybe later. Now, we've never met before, but we've got mutual friends, so...
We've been at the same wedding.
Oh, you're the one who knew what I was talking about in the sermon, aren't you? Was it you?
Well, I actually wasn't at the wedding for the sermon, but I know that your sermon and I would have got everything that you were talking about.
Okay, yeah, because who would talk about the Trinity during a wedding sermon? So I preached at Charlotte and Tom's wedding quite a few years ago now. Maybe three.
2015, I think.
Yeah. My elder daughter's had her braces and had them off since the wedding, because she got them on the week after the wedding.
Yeah.
There we go. So we both know Charlotte Scott, who was Charlotte Page, through, and you know her through Christian Aid.
We did. We kept turning up at meetings together, talking about similar bits of work, and we ended up running a kind of internship support program together for various intern groups we were running, and it was great to get to know her and Tom through that. Really, the benefits of.
So the first question is, do you drink tea?
I do drink tea.
And what's your favourite cup of tea?
Well, I think the first cup of tea in the morning, if it's made by someone else, tastes marvellous. I think that's probably... But I've recent times stopped drinking coffee for a long while, and I attend these very hipster coffee shops, and... So I started drinking fruit infusions, which I don't know whether it's technically tea, but it's really good. And there's a really, really lovely tea. So I think it's my favourite because I haven't had it very much. But it's called Blue Raspberry.
Mm.
And when you pour it, it's blue. And when you add lemon, it turns purple. So it's just great fun to drink, but it also tastes quite nice.
It's just indicator, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I love it. It's fabulous.
You don't normally get to drink the indicator.
No. But yeah, so I like Blue Raspberry, and it's from a company in Brighton who make it, so yeah.
So you get the question which I'm asking everybody.
Yeah.
How do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
With fascination, and probably with a whole bunch of questions.
It isn't my statement.
Well, no, I mean I didn't think it was. I think it's one I've heard knocking around.
Mm.
It kind of got me on it as I was thinking about that question. It's got me thinking about, is it just a choice between death and sleeping? I'm kind of, that's my thing. Are there any other options? You know, and are there some people that are awake and some people that are sleeping? And then that kind of got me onto a thing about, so what evidence is that based on? Just kind of going, okay, so how is that being gathered? And then I thought about, from which perspective is that being articulated? And I think part of the problem is that it's very quick to move from talking about Christianity to talking about church. And I really worry about that, you know, because is it just a kind of church that's struggling with attendance in a world where people don't really have lives that can really attend church like they used to? Or is it something deeper than that? So I think that's quite a confusing narrative between the two. And then I kind of thought, what does sleep do for you? Is this sleep a good thing? And I guess sometimes, you know, like teenagers sleep loads because they do loads of growing. And I think that's a really good thing because they need to kind of process and grow and generally lie in bed a lot. And so that could be a really good thing. Maybe this sleep thing is brilliant. But then I thought, is death a good thing too? And then I was kind of taken to the kind of, you know, as a seed falls to the ground, then something new will grow from it. And so I kind of hope there's some death.
Mm-hmm.
Not the death of Christianity, but the death of Christianity as we know it, to see what new is coming. And we have that in our kind of big narrative, don't we, of resurrection. Death and resurrection and that kind of Paschal mystery, and I kind of like that. And for me, if I was honest, Janet, I would say that whilst that's hugely challenging for the institution of the church, I think that that is something that is really good. That maybe we're just getting over. The whole we've got to keep it all together and kind of in denial about when things are coming to an end. For me, that's why I think the death is a good thing, because I think it means we might find out what's after that and what new life is. Mm. What do you think?
I'm really fascinated by this question, which is why I'm doing this project, because the evidence from where I work is contradictory. Our Sunday mornings, I cannot do anything to get people to come to church on a Sunday morning. But our other congregations are all growing. So we have two weekday BCP congregations, which are growing. Or at least, well, one is growing and the other one is maintaining the same, which is really good, considering everybody who was in the first congregation when I went there has died. So we used to have 10 or 12. They've all died or moved away. A couple have moved to other places. But people are still coming to that. Mm-hmm. People are moving into that kind of reflective space, and our kind of messy church type children's youth stuff is growing, but it's not on a Sunday morning.
We can see that.
Do that other times, and that is growing. So our normal Sunday attendances are falling, but our weekday attendances are growing. And last year was the first year for one of our churches where they tipped the balance.
Really?
So we had more people worshipping during the weekdays than we did on Sundays in one of my churches. And that's partly because our kind of messy church type church is on a Friday afternoon, so it's a very much clearer Sunday versus non-Sunday delineation, whereas in the other parish we have Sunday afternoon things, and so it's more Sunday mornings, and we have two quite different things which happen on Sunday afternoons, which actually buoy up the Sunday numbers, but they're not Sunday morning. So that's what I'm kind of thinking. What will need to die, what will grow in its place?
Maybe it's transition, isn't it? You know, I think how people live. You know, 20 years ago, you know, the internet was in its kind of commercial infancy, and you know, we're pre-euro, pre kind of, you know, everything, you know, the whole of the kind of Western world was very different, and I think there's a transition of people living differently. You know, we're at a time where there's the kind of gig economy for work. People take more time to look after. They'd like to take more time to do kind of childcare. Mm-hmm. I think there are different. I see different generations making choices around work on principles other than just making sure they've got money coming in. I mean, they want to live well, and I think part of a big organisation like the church that represents a view of Christianity. I think it's tough to get your head around all those changes, bearing in mind that essentially what you're offering is a product, but you're not really asking people what they want. And I think with things like messy church and the midweek stuff, there's actually some thinking gone into those, which is thinking about what is it that people might be able to access or need. I remember in my previous job as a youth advisor, one of the questions I would ask is not what is it will young people do for the church, but what is it the church can do for young people. And part of that has to be a conversation or a listening, at least, to kind of thinking, well, if we want, you know, we want young people to come to church on Sundays, then clearly no one really understands young people, because if it's Sunday mornings, you know, that's quite a precious time for lots of teenagers who want to lie in bed or whatever they're up to, doing sports, you know, the activities. So I wonder whether there's just a transition. And maybe the kind of sleep and death thing is probably a bit too strong. I like that bold narrative, and I like the kind of thought trip that the question kind of got me thinking through. But I think if our faith or our Christian narrative has got resonance, it should permeate all aspects of life. And I think what you're talking about shows that. And for me, that's encouraging. And if it's the death of church as we know it, and the new birth of something, then fine. Bring it on.
I'm going to move on to your specialist questions now.
Oh.
I didn't think they'd be that hard.
Yeah, it really got me thinking, though.
So, I asked Caroline Sturtridge, should adults do more Lego? And she said, yes, of course. And I assume your answer would be similar, but I want to know why.
Well, it's a kind of yes, I think I want to say from the start, because, but not for consumer reasons, not for the product of Lego. For me, it's about the process of play that I think is kind of the important part of it. It doesn't have to be Lego. I love the fact that when Ole Kirk Christensen invented Lego about 60 years ago, he kind of took the words for Danish words for play well, which is legot. I can't say it properly, but it, so the word Lego means play well, and so essentially it was a product that was designed around playing. And clearly, you know, post-war Europe, the kind of growth of play and things and toys was just kind of important. But for me, it's been about really that most learning that people do comes through play. And there's something about adulthood or moving into the workplace that seems to kind of remove the benefits of play. So I would say that Caroline is right that more adults should do that, but I think it's very much about how do you embrace the positives of play to give you the fullness of life and keep learning.
Years ago, I was at a meeting where the bishop then, the then bishop of where I was working, said that he'd gone to see a spiritual director and had gone to stay in her big house, which I think sometimes is a retreat centre, but there wasn't really anyone there. And he went in for her first session and she said, I want you to go and play in the house for an hour.
That's weird, isn't it?
And
wild.
Which was just, it was like, and he said that was, he'd been so overburdened that actually she just said that, and it was a real challenge to him to think. And I guess the Lego gives some structure to that. Do you want to say something about what your job is now? Because you give people background.
Yeah, a bit of my background. So previously been a teacher, educationalist, youth worker, youth advisor, and within the last 3 months I've just launched my own small business. It's crazy, but it's brilliant fun. I've done so much learning about what you do when setting up a business. But the essence of my business is a small management consultancy which works with teams and organizations through change, through strategy, through personal development. And one of the tools that I use, which is great we answer this question because it's really got me thinking about it, is I use a methodology called Lego Serious Play. And it's, if you like, the serious play bit is really the important part, but the Lego is just a fantastic tool to do it with. I'm a facilitator and trainer, and I use Lego Serious Play to deliver significant goals for small teams, for management groups, corporates, churches, charities, and schools. Yeah.
So, I'm going to ask you the personality type question now. I know this is probably the one that's made your head ache.
So, no, I loved it. I loved the question. I really did.
So one of my children, when they were younger, liked Lego a lot. But the other wasn't really interested in the Lego, but was really interested in playing with the Playmobil people. It was the people that were the important things. There would be lists of people, various whiteboards and registers, and it very, very into people. So has always made me wonder if love of Lego, whether it's universal or whether it can map onto personality type.
Well, I got a confession. I'm half Dutch, so it's a kind of Playmobil would always feature slightly within the culture because it's a German product, and so I grew up in the kind of 70s and Playmobil was quite big. So I always had Playmobil, but I also had Lego, and I played with both. And so really reflecting on your question around personality types, I kind of wanted to probably to ask you some questions about how your children played. So your observation about how they played with them. Mm. If I give you a bit of my understanding around what Lego is, we say within the last 15 to 20 years, is very much, it's tied in with movie franchises. I won't mention their names, but you know.
No, so one of mine was a builder. She was a give her the plan, she'll build it of houses and structures and then adapt them. So not the franchise stuff, kind of more classical.
But wanted to follow instructions.
like following instructions, but would then change things.
Okay, so would learn some tricks. Okay, and the Playmobil player,
very into organising the groups of people, writing down the lists. If people didn't have necessarily have families that they belonged to, she would place them into families.
How fabulous.
They would do schooling, and they would do
I mean, it's. I mean, one of the.
But
I mean,
she didn't want to build a Lego house.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I was when I had that when you sent me that question, I was kind of thinking it'd be really interesting to talk about the type of play. And when I'm talking about types of play, I'll probably say there are kind of some main themes that come up. So one is just construction. People like building and playing. There's a fiddling and experimenting, which I guess describes your child who was into the Lego stuff. You know, that kind of I can build something and I can adapt. So that's really so just construction. That's great, and that's how some of our greatest inventions are made, by people just playing with things. Then there is what I would say is narrative storytelling and kind of metaphor. So where you create culture, where you play stories out, you try scenarios out. If you like, it's an experimentation. And I think a lot of children in that element of play do a lot of life learning. You can try on lots of different guises, or you can organise different societies and see what works and what doesn't. And particularly if you're playing with other children, that's where sometimes the rules of life, and you learn about kind of group dynamics and kind of, if you like, your social etiquette will come. Number of education systems across Europe actually start schooling a lot later in terms of formal schooling, but actually have a play base to their learning from when we start testing children at three in this country. So I'm always, you know, so they see play as part of development.
We use Duplo or Lego a lot during our church services, our less traditional church services. In fact, we now have three separate boxes in three of our different worship centres that we've managed to get together of Duplo. Do you know if other churches do the same?
I do know that there are some churches who use Lego, because Lego's quite a draw culturally, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's a kind of very... You know, it's a families and children's safe zone. It's an expensive toy. So it's and people love it because partly it's a special toy, and so I do know of some churches that do that. But often they do it as part of kind of young people and families work. They might bring it out as for a prayer station, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So it's got a particularly kind of focus on doing it, and a lot of them will do it, you know, where they're having an afternoon, or they use it as part of messy church. There are a couple of churches in around the local area who do Lego clubs.
Okay.
But as for being part of worship, that's when you said it was part of your services. I'd be fascinated to know, how does it work?
So we use it as part of our messy church.
Cool.
And every time we have one of the messy church type services, we have a challenge. A Duplo challenge, and it's to do with the Bible story.
Come, give me an example. I'm intrigued.
So that's why I'm scrolling through pictures. So I'm finding photos. So we did creation. So people did flowers.
Oh, that's awesome! You have got a lot of Duplo. That's amazing.
And we've also done remembrance. We've done poppies. There's a particular. I'll show you some more pictures. They're poppies. Often the dads want to get involved. We might make a tree. We made some Lego boats for the storm.
So what kind of questions do you ask to kind of steam? Do you read a story then ask a question kind of thing?
We do all the activities beforehand, and then we do the story at the end. But it will have a can you make a whatever Duplo. Oh, so we might make a can you make some Duplo flowers? How do you think God felt when he made flowers?
Wow.
You know, that sort of theological questions.
Do you get any feedback from the people about that?
We normally bring it into the kind of gathered time, and we get people to bring up their Duplo and to say what they've done.
I had when I read the question, I had a real flight of fancy about it, which was, you know, could the Lego just be left in the church? I mean, I know Lego, it's not the kind of thing you want to lose because it's not cheap. But I just wonder what it would be like just to have it out as part of your worship offering, because in Lego serious play you'd be fascinated. So the whole process is based around a kind of a core four process, kind of four main processes, or it's four stages. So
I'm just showing them the picture of the poppy that one of the dads did from Duplo for Remembrance Sunday.
It's a great thing. That's huge as well.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want that to fall on you. But LEGO Serious Play has first thing. So what it is, LEGO Serious Play is based on a series of builds that get progressively more challenging, and as they become more challenging, they become more significant. But it's based around asking a question, of which then there is a time to build, and people will then build a model about what the question is. And then here's the thing, is it's brilliant, is that everybody gets to talk about their model, and everybody listens, and you can ask questions. And essentially, that's what LEGO Serious Play does, but it works through a number of progressions and iterations and how you either build as an individual or you build collaboratively. Now, I've done this with my home group, just because we were, the last series of, before we got into our next sermon series, we were looking at the Creed as a home group. And I got lumbered by my wife into, no, I got asked by my wife if I'd lead a session on the Creed, and I said, well, I'll have a go at doing it at LEGO Serious Play. So I've got these little LEGO Serious Play starter bags that are great. And one of the things I'm passionate about is starting with where people are rather than where I want them to be. So I gave them all a bag and we did a few little fun exercises, just getting used to the bricks. And then I asked them the question, build a model that tells me what the best thing about being a Christian is for you, about your faith. What's the thing you value most? And so they had 5 minutes to build this thing. I was a little bit worried that people wouldn't go for it, but they did, and they built these models. And what was really good, we're all sat around a table, very similar to how we're sitting now, and everybody built a model, everybody talked about the model, what they liked. And it was just brilliant because everybody listened, and there was a level playing field. Not, you know, the normal thing in home groups, there's normally the grumpy person who kind of huffs at things, and then there's someone who talks too much, and there's someone who's quiet. What this does is it kind of got a really good framework for bringing people in. And then after that, we read the Apostles' Creed. Just said, this is one of the creeds we've got. And then I asked them to build what was the most significant part of the Apostles' Creed for them. So starting with what they thought was, you know, the first build, what they thought was most valuable to them. Read the Apostles' Creed, what's the most important? And it was really interesting.
What is your favourite thing that begins with T?
I like tremolo guitar. So let me explain what tremolo guitar is for those who don't know. Tremolo is an effect of kind of, if you like, a modulation effect.
Mm-hmm.
That rhythmically changes the volume of something. It's not just on guitars, but I particularly like it on the guitar. And so the tremolo effect is used really well by I'm going to sound really old when I talk about the Smiths, but when I was a kid, the Smiths were just an amazing group. And Johnny Marr, their guitarist, had this really nice jangly guitar sound. And occasionally you get this lovely little modulation through it. And I found out that was a tremolo effect. And that's kind of, I think my favorite tier is tremolo because it can be quite a subtle effect. So there you go, that's my favourite tea.
That's great. Thanks ever so much for having me here today, Ben.
It's been a pleasure and it's lovely to meet you.